And I thought, you know what? I have a pretty solid track record of my career behind me. I've done a bunch of things. I really believed in my marketability. And I felt at that point that it was a low enough risk for me to take the leap into full-time entrepreneurship. And so that's what I did in August 2016. That turning 40 combined with the business had already been, you know, active for 7 years with me putting attention to it as a hobby side hustle /. It was growing. It had a lot of potential. I believed in it this entire time. And I guess I just couldn't think of any reason why I wouldn't pursue it. And I really didn't want to have regrets about not doing it. If not now, when?
Welcome to 7 to 8, our special series on 7 to 8 figure entrepreneurs. In this special series, I interview $1 million, some $10 million, and even some $1 million business owners who uncovered their twists and turns in their entrepreneurial adventure in order to help you to avoid the potholes and stick to the fast track. Welcome now to Center Stage, our next special guest. Hey there, peeps. This is Michelle Nedelec, and I am super glad that you're here with us today because I am here with my most amazing guest, Marnie. Marnie, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. So give everybody the highlight of who you are and what you do for business.
So my name is Marnie Rabinovich-Konsky, and my company is Thigh Society. We make a premium anti-chafing slip short or a long leg boxer brief for women, depending on how you want to think about it, that prevents thigh chafe, prevents your thighs from rubbing, releases heat. It's been a long day.
Sometimes absorbing heat would be a great thing. I mean, I'd be totally up for that. You got the Canadian market.
There you go. Exactly. Especially in this weather. Can spring come already? Basically a long leg functional boxer brief for women that's premium and made of premium fabrics.
Yeah. Fun. So how did you get into that as a thing?
So a classic entrepreneur story. I was a girl with a problem. I was walking on one of my lunch breaks in downtown Toronto in 2008, early June, forgot to put on my trusty bike shorts underneath my summer dress and realized, you know, oh, this is the season of chub rub. You know, better get those like bike shorts ready and dusted out of the drawer and get ready to wear them all summer long. Cause that was my only solution. I had tried, you know, creams and gels. I had tried men's underwear, cutting my leggings. And I just got to this point where I thought, you know, there has to be a better way, you know, shaking my fists into the air. And actually that exact day, I forgot to wear the bike shorts. I popped into a local pharmacy, grabbed some baby powder, ran back to the office. Well, more like did the penguin walk or the duck walk, keeping my thighs separated, getting back to my office, ran to the bathroom, threw the powder on, made a huge mess. Of course, I was wearing a black dress, white baby powder, used to get the picture. And it was in that moment that I thought, you know what, I need a solution for this summer. I cannot go on like this. And so I spent the rest of the summer doing some research to figure out if I could find these long leg underwear for women and women identifying people that I was looking for, and ultimately could not. So I ended up taking, I quit my, I mean, there's a long story that a lot happened between 2008 and now, but I did quit my job and take 6 months off to really sow the seeds, if you will, for this business, learn everything I could about underwear manufacturing, e-commerce, retail, all of that.
You actually plan to go into business?
Right?
Wow. Talk what to me. Nobody does that.
Who does that? I mean, it's interesting because I think I'd had an entrepreneurial bug my entire life. I did, like, full disclosure, I did go to McGill and get an undergrad degree in entrepreneurship and finance. Fun. But I didn't actually follow a typical entrepreneur path after university. As a kid, I had a tutoring company. I was making crafts and things that I was selling at like church Christmas bazaars and all of that. But, you know, if you want to count that as like early signs of entrepreneurship, sure. But I like to think of it that all of the roles I ended up getting after graduation were very intrapreneurial in nature. So I ended up, you know, through circumstance and more than choice, in roles in a big multinational consulting firm, in government and academia, that really put me in a position where I could create a path forward for the role that I was responsible for. There wasn't a roadmap for what I was doing in a lot of cases. So whether it was a new program, a new offering, a new product, I was really getting my sort of feet wet in the world of entrepreneurship and business. So it wasn't such a stretch to, you know, stretch, pun intended, our shorts are very stretchy. It wasn't such a stretch to actually, you know, plan for a business. And I did have a ton of business ideas that I didn't end up pursuing in the, you know, years, in the decade preceding my launch of Thigh Society. So it wasn't just like a, you know, split second decision.
Well, yeah, it almost sounds like you have some, what is that word? Oh my God, the word just popped right out of my head. Politics and government, the union experience, which is like the antithesis of government, which is why I couldn't think of the word.
Yes, no, and I mean, we could spend a whole conversation just talking about that. I realized very quickly, having gone from a fast-paced, nimble, you know, sink or swim environment in a multinational consulting firm for 7 years, to the government was really like a smack in the face. Like, it was a really big shell shock for
me. That's like getting off the airplane in, you know, in the tropics and going, poof.
Yeah, it was. It was that. And I was fortunate though, because I met someone who turned out to be a really good friend as a result of that experience, and was helping me to conceptualize those early days of Thigh Society. And I think it also taught me what I, you know, what I really wanted and what I needed. And I really wanted and needed more challenge. And so, yeah, that was, I'll take that experience for what it was. I don't regret anything, but right. I was ready to leave after 2 years, and I was ready to explore and experiment. And, in a nutshell, I did take 6 months off, realized after 6 months, this is going to take a long time to actually make this product. It's not going to go viral overnight. Just because you have a website doesn't mean people are going to flock to it. And I wanted to maintain the lifestyle that I had been used to at that point. And that meant going back into the workforce and taking a salary again and working on my business as a side hustle or a hobby. I sort of used to take offense to the word hobby because I felt like it was kind of in between a hobby and a side hustle, in the sense that it was a hobby that I really loved, but it was not a side hustle in the sense that I wasn't working from my, I didn't come home from my day job at 5 o'clock and work until midnight. You know, you hear a lot of entrepreneurs who do that, and my hat's off to them.
Right.
Yeah. I think I'm too much of a hedonist for that. I was really like, nah, I kind of still want to enjoy my life. I want to have time to spend with family and friends. But it certainly did take up some time. It was just somewhere that in that in between. And so I went back to work by doing a bit of a career change at the same time, because why not keep it interesting? Became a career coach at the University of Toronto for MBA students. And that, to me, when I joined, was supposed to be a 2-year plan to get my business ramped up. You know, I figured there was some stability in like a roughly a 40-hour work week where I could work on the business on the side. What I didn't know was the hours weren't so regular. There's a lot of, you know, recruiting cycles that happen in an MBA school where students are constantly looking for jobs and doing career changes and whatnot. And I found myself working more and more and had less time for the business, but at the same time was really enjoying this new coaching path, and was really feeling really personally satisfied with the coaching aspect. So my 2-year plan turned into a 7-year plan of working full time with those MBA students and working on Thigh Society and growing the business slowly. And ultimately, how we got to today is in August 2016, I had just turned 40 that summer, and the business had grown to a point where I felt like this could be something that I could do full time. I could potentially draw a salary from this business, maybe not immediately, but definitely, you know, hopefully in a year or two. And I thought, you know what? I have a pretty solid track record of my career behind me. I've done a bunch of things. I really believed in my marketability. And I felt at that point that it was a low enough risk for me to take the leap into full-time entrepreneurship. And so that's what I did in August 2016. That turning 40 combined with the business had already been, you know, active for 7 years with me putting attention to it as a hobby side hustle /. It was growing. It had a lot of potential. I believed in it this entire time. And I guess I just couldn't think of any reason why I wouldn't pursue it. And I really didn't want to have regrets about not doing it. If not now, when?
Right. I love it. So I got to ask, what do you think it might have been your university background that was the seed for, hey, I should probably do some research on this before going into business? Or is that just kind of your personality, or what was?
I can hear my McGill professors in the background waiting for this answer. I have to be totally honest and say, I don't think my education necessarily helped. I think actually my training at that multinational consulting firm laid the foundation for the skill set that I brought to Thigh Society. I think the research element for sure, and the spending my time to get to know what I was planning to do.
I honestly think you're the first entrepreneur I've ever met that without that that took time to go, hey, I think I should plan this thing.
Yeah. Well, I'm a risk averse person. I call myself a reluctant entrepreneur. So maybe you're picking up on some of that. I'm not someone who is a lover of risk. Although I think entrepreneurs, there are different entrepreneurs who have different levels of risk and comfort levels.
Absolutely.
If there's a spectrum, I'm certainly at the end of the spectrum that is not comfortable with risk, which is pretty crazy that I am where I am right now. But I think it's a function of getting used to things over time. You know, things become less scary as you start to wait in them a little longer. I'm surrounded by people that I can trust for good advice. So I'm not just making decisions independently. These are very calculated, intentional risks. But I think, you know, for me, maybe it was my training of having had that entrepreneurial experience where I was used to having a blank slate with a lot of questions. So I know that I have to get to this point all the way here. Let's work backwards and figure out what it's going to take to get there. And I think that is where the planning came in. And so a lot of that was from my previous career, probably with that foundation, you know, after graduating university and going to work for this multinational that.
Hey, don't get me wrong. I think it's brilliant. And I'm sure it helped you immensely to not go through all of the problems and walls and valleys that most entrepreneurs find themselves trying to dig themselves out of.
Yeah. I mean, no one has a crystal ball, right? But my guiding principle for me, honestly, was I had a problem. Mm-hmm. I needed to validate that I wasn't the only one with this problem. And definitely I also wanted to validate, right? Definitely not. I was told at the beginning it was niche. I don't believe it's niche anymore. And I haven't for a while. But I also, oh my gosh, I lost my train of thought. The belief that there was a need for it. And I actually was very keen to find something else on the market to invalidate my business idea. So my approach was, I'm going to do everything I can to scour the market to find this product that I'm looking for, because if it exists, I don't need to invent it.
Right.
And a lot of people, I think, you know, and I also did a lot of research with focus groups and things that people in my network and like random people I'd get together on, you know, we didn't have Zoom back then, but I forget what platform I used to get people just talking
Skype.
To me, whether or not it was, yeah, Skype, probably like Messenger to basically validate that this was a need, because I was, my risk averseness was, if I'm really going to do this, I want to make sure that I have an offering or an idea for a product that a large enough segment of the population I'm targeting is going to want to buy. Right. Because otherwise it's just a nice to have. Otherwise you could have a hobby, right? Mm-hmm. You can have a couple of things that you make that you're really passionate about. Maybe it's something handcrafted or, you know, that you want to offer to the world, but you're not necessarily interested in making your living off of that. Mm-hmm. Or you might be, but I was looking for every opportunity to not go into entrepreneurship. Let me find something that exists so I don't have to do this. Seriously. Yeah.
That's hilarious. And then yet it didn't work. Well, and I love it because I was when I was in good shape, I loved the short shorts, but I hated the thigh rub. So I got the mesh shorts to go underneath them so that mm-hmm. that wouldn't happen. I didn't care mm-hmm. what I looked like. I didn't care if it was a fashion statement or not. I was like, I am not doing that to myself anymore. So I love that. So who would you say you serve and support now? Who is your main audience?
Our main audience is women and women identifying people between the ages, I would say, of 25 and 75. We like to say that our products will support you through the ages from, you know, your college years through to, you know, anything else that happens in your life, whether you choose to have a baby or pregnancy or shorts work with maternity, you know, through stages of life, big events that you're celebrating where you need to, you know, be dancing all night, potentially maybe a wedding, maybe other people's mm-hmm. weddings, whatever that may be, through to menopause, you know, our shorts wick moisture. So for those hot flashes and whatnot, and also for overall just general comfort, right? Like it's interesting as a society, we never really question why men get 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 different leg lengths of underwear and women's options are relegated to shapewear, right? Yeah. If a woman wants a long leg underwear, it's like, well, you can wear this shapewear that's going to cinch and, you know, squeeze you and make you feel uncomfortable and be hot, right? Like we don't ever really wonder like, you know, equal underwear opportunity. Why don't we get that chance? So, you know, that's where we came in. And also just to your point before, it's interesting that you said, you know, when I was more fit, I was wearing these shorts underneath. Something that's really, that I'm really big on. And I think one of the reasons why I've, you know, stayed the course with this business is, aside from actually producing really great products that solve a lot of different problems for different people, personally, I am motivated by helping people feel confident and amazing in their skin. Nice. I think, you know, women are bombarded, especially men are too, but women are very big victims, I think, of diet culture. And that is really unfortunate that we are constantly told that we are not thin enough, that our bodies aren't palatable to society unless we rejig our lumps and bumps in certain ways and make ourselves uncomfortable and ultimately smaller in order to fit into society's narrative of what is beautiful. And I just wanted to create something that when you put it on, you didn't have to wriggle and contort your body and move things around in order to feel like you fit in it. You could go to the bathroom easily by putting them on, taking them off, and just a no-brainer solution that wasn't connected to any messages that we get from diet culture and this beauty myth that we're sold.
Nice. Well, there are nothing comfortable and or non-intrusive about short shorts. I will say that right now.
Yeah, correct. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
No. Well, and I do think it is funny. Yeah, we're going to get into the guy curl conversation. I was holding a course one time and I said I was going to invent a little thing for the back of your shoes so that the shoes would fit. And one of the guys goes, "Why don't you just buy shoes that fit?" And I said, "Not a girl option." If you want to go into that, we can do that, but that's not a girl out. And his wife kind of elbows him and was like, "Not here, not."
Yeah.
Like, we don't have the options guys have, you know, guys get black and brown in 27 different shapes. We get 27 different colors in two shapes. It's like, so true. Yeah, but that's not what I am.
So true. And you're right that we don't even think about shoe size is such a great example. We don't equate our shoe size with our worth. So right? Why are we able to equate our pant size, right, with our worth? It's so crazy.
Although some do. I have, my sister went from a size 6 to a size 7. She almost died. I'm like, I've never been a size 6 nor a size 7 that I remember. So yeah.
Yeah, since I was 12, maybe.
Right. We get attached to very silly things. So are you going wholesale now? Are you in big stores? Where are you?
So
tell me.
Good question. The short answer is we are only online. We are, with a few exceptions, we do sell to some select boutiques across Canada in a very reactive way. So right now we basically just take requests from basically women-owned boutiques across mm-hmm. Canada specifically who are interested in carrying our product. And we have a very like no fuss approach to it. So when a retailer messages us and says, "Hey, I'd love to carry Thiacidi in my store," you know, we'll say, "Okay, that's great. We are predominantly a direct to consumer online business. We'd love to help you. We do have a wholesale discount, but we have them put their orders through our website, and it's basically very hands off. So it's not a model where you'd see a brand supplying the retailer with all of this point of purchase display material and, you know, share. We're not a very promotional brand at all. We position ourselves as a premium brand and we stand by the quality of our undergarments. So it's not like the retailer has to worry that we're going to be offering discounts and sales on a frequent basis on our website that they have to compete with. But we really decided, and I decided early on, to keep our focus on direct to consumer because, again, back to the reluctant entrepreneur aspect, I grew my company very slowly and with freelance contractors. And so anytime I wanted to explore a different, either a business channel or a different focus for the business, it would mean hiring somebody else on. We are also a bootstrapped company, so we're all self-funded. So I'm always weighing my options of like, where do I think I can get the most bang for my buck that is aligned with the strategy that I want to go forward with. And so circling back to my early years, I did think it was really important in 2009 to have a presence in retail. You know, Amazon wasn't really around back then. People weren't used to shopping for everything under the sun online. It was starting to become more common, but I did get a few raised eyebrows at the beginning when I was like, "I'm going to focus, you know, really exclusively on direct to consumer, on online." People were like, "What? No one's going to buy underwear online. They want to come into a store and touch it and feel it." I was like, "Maybe, but I think this is a different product. I'm willing to take a chance on it." And yet I still did go out and have a really like simple strategy to approach, again, brick and mortar, women-owned boutiques in Canada to stock our products. And so that was the case. We were in about over a dozen stores for about 10 years. And then the pandemic hit. And unfortunately, some of those stores didn't make it because they weren't able to pivot online quickly enough, which was really, really unfortunate, really sad because I love supporting other women-owned businesses. And all to say that where we are today is really with that strong focus direct to consumer. Most of our sales are in the US, actually 80% of our business in the US, probably due to the fact that they get warmer weather, more months of the year than we do up here in Canada, but we're obviously still a very proud Canadian brand. And we do still supply retailers with our products, but early on I did have an opportunity to join the Bay and people were always like, why don't you approach Nordstrom, rest in peace, Nordstrom Canada. And I just wasn't interested. I think that, again, back to the whole, I didn't have the resources to do it. And I decided to stay very focused because I was bootstrapping. I just didn't want to divert my attention and focus to another part of the business when I was really still trying to grow and build the digital online direct-to-consumer presence.
Well, it is. And I love this conversation because it is a very big decision to do that. And I have seen a lot of companies break because they haven't been able, they've oversold fulfillment. And you have to be able to regulate fulfillment. You have to be able to provide, right? If all of a sudden it catches on and you're like, well, sure, we need money. Like, we need a manufacturing plant. We need something. And if you don't have the people and the wherewithal to be able to fulfill on that, it's not only the opportunity that's gone, it's that they can take down a company very quickly, especially the likes of, Costco. They go from, this is our regular monthly order. We want 10 times that and we want it tomorrow. It's like, can't do that.
Yeah.
Not going
to
happen.
Totally. Totally. And I think you could try to build that in to the start of your business, but sometimes it's not always possible. Like for product-based businesses, usually there's minimum order quantities, right? So you're limited by who's going to take you on as a partner if you can meet their MOQs. And so for us, that was a bit of a limitation in the beginning, more on us, on cash flow. Mm-hmm. All of the manufacturers we partnered with at the beginning probably could have scaled much quicker than we were scaling. But it is a factor. As far as, fulfillment goes, that's such a great point because, I remember packaging my orders by hand for many, many, many years until it got to the point where I was spending hours on fulfillment. And it was like, this is not smart anymore.
I'm not really liking my garage as much as I used to. Right? I don't know why.
Exactly. And so then it was, okay, well, let's find, do I want to bring this in-house and hire people to do the fulfillment? Or do I want to go with a 3PL, a third-party fulfillment company to do this for us? And I went with 3PL because I didn't want to take on, that's a whole other business, fulfillment and shipping. And then with a lot of the big retailers, there's also some systems you need to have in place, like technology, the way, invoicing, a whole bunch of things I was just not ready for. But it could be different in different businesses, right? People who are in food service, for example, who want to provide to grocery or Costco, there are things that they would need to set up probably sooner for their business than someone in my space would need to set up for mine.
Well, and I don't think people realize kind of the technology required and it can come down to, what's the size of your packing and just packaging and does it fold? You're like, what? Does it fold? Why would you ask me that? I'm like, well, because we need to know for the dimensions of blah, blah, blah. And there's so many little intricate things that can come into play there.
Product shipping can make or break a business. And that's one of the first pieces of advice that I share with other entrepreneurs, which is, who are product-based, whatever that is. Yeah. How are you going to ship this? Right? Mm-hmm. Is it because your shipping costs, especially in Canada, are going to comprise a huge chunk? It's going to eat out of your margins. You have to build that into your pricing, and how can you scale? Is there a way to get the product to fold smaller, to your point? Is there lighter weight envelopes or packaging you could use? Think about that right at the get-go. I think we all want to have an amazing experience for our customers at the receiving end of these products. But we also have to acknowledge that a lot of these products are going to be, a lot of the packaging is going to be throwaway. And I think we all have an environmental responsibility, right? To reduce, waste with plastics and paper, making sure papers are recycled. That's certainly been a focus for us at Thigh Society over the years, to always do something that could potentially be recycled if someone has recycling and they're available to them. We use recycled materials in our packaging. We don't use disposable bags. Like you can actually use it to hold your cosmetics or pens and things like that. And we try to make the experience, no, we don't have a huge box where, there may be pretty wrapping paper and a bunch of little extras, but in our experience, that stuff ends up getting thrown in the garbage. So we've taken an approach to make it as light as possible, you know, as cost effective as possible for us and the customer, but also usable and just in as environmentally responsible as we can be. And we're constantly trying to iterate on that.
Nice. I love it. And that too becomes part of the story of who you're appealing to, because a lot of people don't realize they argue the activist side of things 1 minute and then they go shopping and go, oh, what a pretty package. I think I'll go and buy that. It's like, okay, that just said a lot more in the marketplace than anything you could possibly say on YouTube or Instagram. And mm-hmm. we have to understand that impact and what it makes and getting in touch with the story, because you as an owner have then this quandary of, you know, what's the story? What's the branding? Are we the Tiffany's of underwear, so to speak? Or are mm-hmm. we, you know, what are we going to do and how are we going to do this? And how does that come across? Or does it become, you know, if there's too much recycling and it comes off as a little, oh, it's a tree hugger thing. Well, I don't know if we want it in our stores. And like, what? Really? No. How did you jump to that conclusion on this? But it really does become part of that story and part of your long-term decisions.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah.
Love. So what was been one of your favorite part of this journey and one of your favorite parts of your business?
I have to say that's an easy one. The customers, because I like to say that I was customer number one for this product because I needed it. And it's so validating when we hear from customers, even now, all these years later, 13 years later, who will willingly write a product review for us, who will send an email impromptu responding to one of our, you know, email campaign newsletters, or send us a DM on Instagram or post on our social feed, just to say how game changing our shorties have been for them, that it's allowed them to, you know, wear dust off dresses in their wardrobe that they weren't able to previously wear in hot weather because of chafe. You know, to stop spending money on all these other products that they've tried that haven't met the bar that they were looking for something that was comfortable and wicking and invisible. You know, we like to say our shorts are set it and forget it. Like some people will come home from a long day and forget they even had them on. And so for me, that's been the highlight of the business and continues to be the highlight of this, which is, wow, like with my team's help, we are building a brand and we are offering products that are legitimately making people's lives better. You know, I try to have perspective all the time for sure. Like we're not literally saving lives. We're not surgeons, right? we're not doctors. So like we have some perspective here, but we are making a difference in people's confidence and their comfort. And to me, that is so satisfying. And honestly gets me through the hard times, because it's really sure, you know, to make a business keep going, you need to be generating revenue. Ideally, you're profitable, all of that good stuff. You know, hopefully you're making a living, you're providing other people with a means to make a living. You know, you're on my team, like I'm allowing them to do what they love to do. But, you know, and at the end of the day, it comes down to us making something that people really want. This is a product that is in need by a lot of people, and we're happy to provide it with a message that accompanies it, that you are just fine in the skin that you're in right now, and we're here to support you.
Love it. So I know our listeners are going to want more from you. How do they get a hold of you? Where do they find you?
So the business is at Thigh Society, THIGH, a little play on High Society, for those that didn't catch that. we're at Thigh Society on all channels, and I am at Marnie Konski on all channels as well. Admittedly, I'm not the best on social media, but I do respond to all comments. What? I know. It's so much time. And if any creators are listening, like my hat's off to you, because social media takes so much time and it's so much work. And I respect the hustle. But I am on social, just maybe not as regular as Thigh Society is.
Well, we will of course have all of your links in the show notes and ways that people can get a hold of you. So go ahead and scroll there. And of course, you don't have to be female to buy them. You get to buy them for the loves of your life anyway.
Your mom, things. Your daughter, your grandmother, whoever.
Awesome. I love it. So you have gone through, my favorite question to ask people is, at what point in life did you know that you were that special kind of crazy enough to think that you could become an entrepreneur? I think we've kind of hammered this one, but was there like an inkling of, you know, I think I could do this?
I think, yes. Was the question what the age is or what age?
Well, just, you know, how did that come about to know that, hey, you know, this whole entrepreneurial thing might have something there?
Yeah, I think again that comes back to when I turned 40, and it was, I wish I could say it was more like a, I think I have something here. It was more the fear of regret. It was more of if not now, when? And really, you know, breaking that, the risk down, you know, making sure I had the savings to do it, and making sure that I felt that I believed in myself, that I was marketable if this failed. So not being afraid to fail, I think is also part of that, right? Saying, you know what, I'm more afraid of regret than I am of failure.
Nice. I love that. Well, yeah. I know thousands, hundreds of thousands of women around the world appreciate and love you when millions of women are going to love you for that. Awesome.
Okay.
You have been absolutely awesome. Thank you. Any last words for our peeps?
I don't know. I guess happy spring. I know it's your people might be listening to this at all parts of the year, but we are recording this, you know, shortly after the first couple of days of spring. So super excited for the warmer weather to come, and go check us out at thighsociety.ca if you're in Canada, or thighsociety.com if you're in the US. And I guarantee our shorts will be one of your besties this summer, this spring and summer.
Love it. Love it. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. And I know how valuable it is.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Peeps, this is Michelle Nedelec. Thank you for being here with us today. Be sure to subscribe to the show and share it with your friends. We love helping entrepreneurs grow. Thank you for listening to 7 to 8. If you're interested in upping your speaking game, be sure to connect with our guests with the links in the show notes, and connect with me to see how we can help you get your tech done for you and help your speaking dreams come true.